Good morning. The auditorium at Air Command and Staff College today has been converted into a federal courtroom. And the hearing that you're about to watch is going to be conducted exactly as if we were in our courtroom in Washington, D.C. As the clerk told you, after the arguments itself, we will adjourn and then entertain questions from the audience. So we will proceed. This is the time set for United States versus Martin. Is the appellant ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, proceed, please.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, good morning. My name is Lieutenant Jacqueline Leonard, and I represent the appellant, Sergeant Beau Martin. Chief Judge Erdman, with the court's permission, I'd request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Fact finders have the duty to determine witness credibility. In Sergeant Martin's case, Corporal AI's human lie detector testimony materially prejudiced Sergeant Martin because his testimony salvaged what was hanging by a thread. That is Lance Corporal CI's credibility. Members of the court, there are two issues before you today. The first, whether the lower court erred in holding that Corporal AI's human lie detector testimony did not materially prejudice Sergeant Martin. And second, whether the invited error doctrine precludes Sergeant Martin from seeking relief from you today. I'd first like to address the invited error doctrine. Sergeant Martin is not precluded from seeking relief because the defense was not the responsible party for initiating this impermissible testimony. It was the government. In his Article 32 testimony, and also in his statement to NCIS, Corporal AI expressed doubt about his wife's allegations against Sergeant Martin. You can find those doubts at Joint Appendix 373. The government knew it needed to preemptively address his doubt, and it did so in its direct examination of Corporal AI and again in his redirect examination.
What specific language are you looking at for that proposition? What specifically was asked?
Yes, Your Honor. The most egregious testimony was elicited at Joint Appendix 51. Trial counsel asked, that was in his direct examination. When you originally talked to NCIS, you told NCIS you thought it possibly could have been you that touched your wife. Corporal AI responds, yes, sir. Trial counsel follows up in the direct by saying, why did you say that? And midway through that following response, he says, just the way she has been since then, I know it wasn't me. She wouldn't be acting the way she does nowadays, like if it would have been me. With that direct examination testimony, Corporal AI is invoking that he initially, September 2011 alleged incident, Lance Corporal CI makes her allegations. So it's 1 year after she says something allegedly happened. Corporal AI still has this doubt about whether she could have mistaken who it was that touched her, whether or not she was even mistaken if she was touched indeed or could have been dreaming about it.
But there was no question asked as to a direct question as to the truth or falsity of the wife's claim.
Correct.
And then when we get into cross-examination following that directed examination that you just referred to, the defense counsel says, and at no point after that did you ever, hey, this is what happened, and then you never went and reported it to anyone, did you? And then he responded, that was his response. He said, it's not like I didn't believe her, sir. So that is testimony that goes to his perception as to whether she was telling the truth or not. So he brought that out. I mean, maybe not intentionally, but it was in response to a question asked by the defense. How can he now argue that when the same question worded a little differently by the government, which came out with about the same answer, is prejudicial when it was already out in response to a question that he made?
Because, Your Honor, trial defense counsel's actions were in direct response to what the government covered in its direct examination. The defense followed up on government's line of questioning about the NCIS statement. It was the government that brought Corporal AI as a witness. It was the government that brought up the NCIS statement and Corporal AI's opinions about what exactly may have happened that night.
But the Look. NCIS statement would have helped the defense, right? Which is that, you know, he didn't say that he thought that it had happened.
Correct, Your Honor. It did help the defense, and that's one of the reasons that defense talked about it in its cross-examination. But the government, the trial defense counsel, brought up the NCIS statement primarily because it was something, an area of questioning that was addressed in the direct examination. The purpose of cross-examination is to attack what the government presented in bringing its witness.
But my point is that his response was not responsive to the question that was asked. He just blurted that out, and so who?
On direct examination, Your Honor?
On cross-examination, where he said, "It's not like I didn't believe her, sir." That wasn't in response to the question that was asked. And the question that was asked was pretty poorly worded, I agree. But it wasn't asking whether or not he believed her. And so he blurted it out. And so now who takes responsibility for that, getting that statement onto the record at that point?
It would be the government who would be responsible. Because first of all, it was their witness. They were required to prepare that witness. They were the ones who first addressed Corporal AI's opinion about what had happened in its direct examination. The defense isn't precluded from asking questions about a witness's recollection. This court held in Zavala that to find questions improper when the government has used certain materials to bolster the credibility of its case would essentially handcuff the defense. So if this court were to find that the government would be allowed to ask to open the door about Corporal AI's doubt, about Corporal AI's opinions or beliefs about what may have happened, to preclude the defense from following up on that material in its cross-examination would essentially obliterate the purpose of cross-examination.
So what you're saying is that what the defense asked was within the permissible scope of cross-examination given what the government had asked?
Yes, Your Honor, exactly.
Well, back to the prejudice aspect of this. As I understand the facts of the case, she did not make a fresh complaint.
Absolutely.
Her first time she complained was over a year later.
That's correct.
And when it was investigated by the NIS, is that who investigated?
NCIS, sir, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. Sorry.
Then he initially said that he didn't believe her, didn't believe it happened. He thought it might have been him.
Yes, Your Honor. And speaking with NCIS, that's what he initially said.
So then, through all of this questioning by the government and the reinforcement by the investigators, he finally came around to the idea, well, it must be true because of the way she's been acting.
Correct. And that's what he testified to, was that he initially had his doubts, but over the 12-plus months that he was able to observe her, she was the mother of his children. They lived together. He had daily opportunities to observe her behaviors, her changes in behavior, and he said, I initially had my doubts, just like you might, members. He didn't say that, but I initially had my doubts.
What I'm concerned about is that all of that direct examination and cross-examination was collateral to his investigative responses. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
He wasn't the one to complain.
No, it was actually Corporal Visconti, a friend of Lance Corporal C.I., who initially made the complaint.
When the question we're concerned about was asked, it goes right to the heart of the matter. Is she truthful?
Correct, which this court used in Casper and again in Knapp to assess whether or not, when there is impermissible human lie detector testimony, that testimony went to the central issue. The lower court found in favor of Sergeant Martin on that point, that the specifically the redirect examination question went right to the central issue, that is whether or not Lance Corporal C.I. was credible.
Now, counsel, your position is that the government transgressed with the questions that were asked on direct, and then it was permissible for the defense to raise issues during cross.
Yes, Your Honor.
To what extent should we now look at this as a strategic decision by the defense? Defense, after the government opened the door, did not object, correct, did not ask for a curative instruction.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't we look at this as it was a tactical decision on the part of the defense to keep the door open so that then they could pursue the issue as they chose?
Because, Your Honor, for the defense to address the situation in cross-examination was simply to deal with the matter that had been put before them. In the direct, this material came out, and defense made the decision to address it in its cross-examination.
But the defense, why shouldn't we at this point consider the fact that perhaps the defense viewed it as a wise decision to leave the door open? And so they are stuck with what came out, rather than the defense, as soon as the government opened the door, through the eyes of the defense, object and seek a curative instruction at that point.
Well, Your Honor, because even under a plain error analysis, if the government, if the defense didn't object to this, if the defense decided either made the implicit decision to go forward with the evidence that had been elicited, or whether trial defense counsel didn't know whether or not they should object. Either way, under a plain error analysis, Sergeant Martin can still prove prejudice from this testimony. As I'd referenced, looking at the two primary factors in Casper, whether or not this impermissible testimony went to the central issue, and second, whether the military judge provided detailed guidance to the members about the human lie detector testimony, both factors favor Sergeant Martin. Because that second factor about an instruction by the military judge, this court has determined that even if such testimony comes out, we can still cure that error by immediately instructing the members with detailed guidance. That's happened in several cases in the past where the military judge instantly, either as soon as the testimony comes out or as soon as that witness leaves the stand, has said, members.
Well, but when the bomb was dropped, the defense sat there mute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So you're saying the judge has sua sponte duty when the bomb is dropped, but defense counsel could certainly have helped by objecting.
They could have, Your Honor, but this court has established that despite any action by the counsel, it is the military judge's duty to ensure the members are given appropriate cautionary instructions when such testimony is elicited.
And at what point was the judge supposed to have jumped in? During the government's direct, on cross, or on redirect?
Well, Your Honor, in Casper and again in Knapp, this court held the military judge must guide members with specificity as to how they should and should not consider the testimony that's been put before them, and that they should do it immediately.
Well, counsel, the question I still have for you and that I'm still confused about,
yes,
is if you pointed to the government's question on redirect and the record at page 63, I would understand the lie detector testimony that you're talking about. I think that that's fairly in response to what was raised by the defense on cross-examination. I'm still having trouble seeing what the human lie detector testimony was on the government's direct.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, it seems to me that the questions were eliciting that her behavior had changed and that was consistent with someone who had someone do this to them.
Yes, Your Honor. And with the certified issue, it's forced both parties to sort of point the fingers at who was the more responsible party. So Sergeant Martin believes that the most egregious testimony was elicited at page 63, Joint Appendix 63 in the redirect. But on direct examination, Corporal AI initially starts testifying to observations, things that would be permissible under MRE 701. But in saying, based on these observations, I have changed my opinion. It led me to believe that she was touched, as she alleges.
I think what he said is that I no longer think it could have been me.
He's removing himself as a potential suspect. That's correct. But he's also saying that because of the observations I've seen, I believe her.
What language specifically are you pointing to? Because I mean the language is important.
Yes, Your Honor. To Joint Appendix 51, when Corporal AI says, so I mean, my wife could have thought about, you know, maybe it could have been another night, but just the way she has been since then I know it wasn't me. She wouldn't be acting the way she does nowadays, like if it would have been me. Even if it was something that she wasn't expecting from me, she wouldn't be acting that way. So he's not expressly saying, I believe she was telling the truth.
He's not saying that she's telling the truth. Right.
Not expressly, yes, Your Honor. Not like he did on redirect.
But on cross-examination, the defense got him to say that he didn't believe her.
Well, on cross-examination, I'll reference pages 57 and 58.
So when he said at the record on page 58, so you weren't entirely convinced that this happened then? No, sir. And you told NCIS that? Yes, sir. You thought that, hey, maybe it never happened, maybe it didn't happen? Yes, sir.
And those are all getting, Your Honor, at whether or not he believed his wife could have been mistaken, testing her recollection of the events. Similar to what we would do in cross-examination when we ask, well, the witness testified, eyewitness testified that the car was black. Is it possible that it could have been navy blue? Trial defense counsel is getting at what exactly happened, and you know, Corporal AI only offered cumulative evidence. He didn't offer anything beyond what witnesses had already testified to.
Well, if it's cumulative, then where's the prejudice?
The prejudice, Your Honor, is in this. The only reason Corporal AI was called, we'll argue, is to bolster his wife's credibility. He testified immediately before she came to the stand. The members had already heard from all of the other government's witnesses. This testimony on redirect examination came out at 16:44. 20 minutes later, Lance Corporal CI, the government's primary witness, the one who the most serious charges facing Sergeant Martin were about, testified. It wasn't until 2 days later that the members heard the standard credibility instruction. So they've heard 20 minutes before she's about to get onto the stand. I doubted my wife at first. I didn't necessarily believe that this had happened. 20 minutes later, she comes to the stand. When the members have already heard from Mr. DW, who had serious credibility issues himself, and CE, who also had serious credibility issues, the members hear from this husband, who has said, I've spent 8 years with my wife. Not the 80 minutes that an expert forensic psychologist may spend with her, not the hour that you're going to hear from her on the stand. I've spent 8 years with her, and I believe she's telling the truth. The members had that in their minds throughout all of her testimony, throughout the following day's testimony, and then 2 days later, they get the standard instruction from the military judge saying you're responsible for assessing a witness's credibility.
If the standard credibility instruction had been provided in a more timely manner, would that have been sufficient to cure any problem?
No, Your Honor, because this court's held that something more specific, something that actually tells the members, it's up to you to determine not just the credibility, but the truthfulness. No witness, whether expert or lay, can tell you that a victim's or complaining witness's truthfulness, they can't offer their specific opinion on that. It is up to you to determine. So the standard credibility instruction is simply not enough to address this truth-telling factor of human lie detector testimony.
So it's your position the die was cast as soon as the government brought him to the stand, because that was the testimony they were after. They just didn't want to go about it directly.
Your Honor, I see my time is about to expire.
Please respond.
Yes, because this had already been addressed at the Article 32 testimony. So trial counsel knew that Corporal AI was potentially going to talk about his belief in the truthfulness of her allegations.
Okay. Judge Ryan has a follow-up.
Yeah, counsel, let's say they hadn't brought Corporal AI to the stand at all, right? What use would the defense have made of his statement to NCIS and all of his doubts about the wife's credibility in the beginning, the fact that he thought that she imagined it and he thought that she dreamed it?
Your Honor, because of the serious credibility issues with the government's other witnesses, trial defense counsel may not have even addressed this NCIS statement. It was an appellate exhibit, so it wasn't even offered to the members. Therefore, the prejudice from actually invoking this testimony by the government created serious prejudice to Sergeant Martin.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have further time on rebuttal. The court will now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Major Suzanne Dempsey, and along with Colonel Mark Jamieson, I represent the United States. This court should not reach the question of prejudice because appellant cannot now benefit from his failed trial strategy. But even reaching the question of prejudice, appellant cannot meet his burden for three reasons. First, the lay testimony had minimal impact on the findings. Second, the members were properly instructed on witness credibility. And third, there were other reasons to believe CRI.
Counsel, what do you make of defense argument that the die was cast by the government's decision to have this particular witness testify, that it was apparent that the only reason he was called was in fact to vouch for the credibility of his wife.
Your Honor, that's incorrect, because Corporal A.I. talked about direct evidence that the assault happened by talking about his observations of her behavior, her changed demeanor, and the source of the harm. He also provided corroborating testimony on 48 and 83 that he was in bed with her that night when this happened, and that she testified that she nudged him in the shoulder and kicked his legs, and he was able to corroborate that that happened in the middle of the night. So there is other reasons that he testified, and this was not one. The only reason that this came out on redirect was in direct reply to what the defense had brought out on cross-examination.
Okay, if we get past invited error and go to prejudice,
yes, sir.
Doesn't the government have a serious problem here? Number one, her credibility was at the core of the case. Number two, the judge did nothing except give the standard instruction 2 days later. Number three, the government's case was, to put it charitably, not strong, because its other witnesses had substantial baggage. What's the government say to that?
Runner, well, unlike Knapp, there was other evidence in this case to believe CRI. In Knapp, the evidence was tainted by the investigator who was saying, I have this ability to divine credibility.
Well, it turned on her credibility, though, and the question of her credibility and vouching for it is at the core of the case, isn't it?
That's just, credibility was a concern, but that's a concern in every trial. But that doesn't mean that it's prejudicial and the impact of the testimony.
Well, but every trial doesn't involve somebody else saying, yeah, I think she's telling the truth.
No, Your Honor, but in terms that had very minimal impact.
How so?
And what's important here is that this is a lay witness, as opposed to expert witnesses that you see in all these other lie detector cases. This is a lay witness.
Well, but it's a lay witness that's her husband, and who said, I know her because I lived with her for 8 years. I know her better than any of these other clowns.
Your Honor, but it's not the same as when you have an expert who the judge is up there saying, with identifying this person as an expert and elevating the status of that person, and then giving a separate instruction in closing and before closings that say specifically that this person has been identified as an expert. So it's very different than
okay,
when you have a lay
witness. Would you proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. So lay witnesses, and also the husband is really, he's a biased witness. He feels guilt about being in bed with his wife. So really the impact of a husband has very minimal value.
Counsel, is there anything in the record that we could look to in response to Judge Olson's questions about this being a trial tactic to let it go? I mean, could we look at the defense counsel's argument? You shouldn't believe her because her husband didn't even believe her, that type of thing.
Yes, Your Honor, and what the defense did in this case was not only elicit the testimony, but the defense exploited the testimony on 323.
Well, because it seems to me it's illogical. If you ask someone that's been married for 8 years and wants to stay married, do you believe your wife? And they'll say, of course I do. I mean,
yes, Your Honor, and he's a biased witness. Normally the defense is out there saying this, you can't believe the husband. Of course they're going to believe their spouse. But what the defense did here is they exploited that testimony. In their argument, this was the last witness that the defense talked about from the government's case. And he argued on 323, he told NCIS he was not convinced that this happened. He told that to NCIS, her own husband. I'm not convinced that happened. In addition to his argument, he had a slide up to the members that had her husband's name with her own husband. So arguing that he was using this testimony to argue for an acquittal.
Well, the government used it as well in closing argument, didn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, in limited reply to that argument, but not in its opening argument, just in rebuttal. And again, this court has recognized that the government can respond in kind. It's not a practice that should be condoned. However, it happened in this case, but that doesn't mean it wasn't invited or that it's prejudicial.
How can you say that the wife's credibility wasn't important when this was essentially, to a degree, a he said, she said crime? The government had one additional eyewitness to it, but that witness's testimony was contradictory as to what exactly had happened that day. So it seems, I guess, what other evidence is there that would, in your view, make this a strong case for the government?
Yes, Your Honor. Like Mullins here, there's other evidence to believe CRI. And
But it all goes back to her credibility. Everything ends up with her credibility.
To credibility, but there's other factors to look at, like there was in Mullins, when that also went down to the credibility of the victims. So we have her testimony, which unlike what the defense is saying is that this wasn't reported until a year later. However, that's inaccurate. She told Corporal Visconti within a few weeks of this happening. She's a new PFC to the command. And this happens to her by her direct supervisor at a party within a few weeks of reporting to her command. And a few weeks later, she's on an exercise with her mentor, who's kind of helping her get used to this command. And she tells her what happened to her at this party. But appellant was deploying, so she didn't want to take further action against appellant. It wasn't until appellant was going to return to the unit that Corporal Visconti actually reported it, because she had observed behavior changes in CRI.
Is there any evidence excluding the victim's testimony, her credibility, evidence outside of that?
The defense was able to mitigate her credibility, but there was also evidence that she had a reputation for being truthful.
But that all goes to her credibility. I'm just trying to figure out if the government had anything besides her testimony.
Corporal AI's testimony as well, that corroborated that what happened in the bed, that she nudged him and she kicked him. And there's also the eyewitness from Mr. West, who was there, who puts the appellant in the bed with her.
But his version of what happened is distinctly different than her version.
It is, but she was also sleeping at the time when the appellant came into the bed with her. So she's going to have a different perspective from what Mr. West saw from the outside. And it's also, there are some things that are similar, and that needs to be taken into account.
Okay.
Also, that her prior consistent statement was admitted as substantive evidence to show that she was being consistent from what she told Corporal Visconti to what she told NCIS and to what she testified to at trial. That's on 348. She had a character for truthfulness, that what she told her staff NCO on 364 and her pastor on 367, as well as her reputation for truthfulness on 364 from her staff NCO. These all show that there were other reasons to believe in this case, that she was a credible witness, and there's other reasons to believe her.
How did the standard credibility instruction, how can that address a human lie detector issue?
Yes, Your Honor, the members were properly instructed here to consider witness credibility, and this should be one factor to consider in overall assessing the prejudicial impact that this had on the members. They were properly instructed to determine witness credibility on 282. The final determination of the weight or significance of the evidence and the credibility of the witnesses in the case rests solely upon you, the members of the court. There's no indication that they failed to follow this instruction.
Haven't we held in prior cases that where there is human lie detector testimony that the standard instruction is not sufficient, that they need a curative instruction telling them to disregard that testimony?
Your Honor, this case has only looked at this issue in terms of experts and quasi-experts with agents. This court has not looked at this issue in terms of lay witnesses.
And why would it be different?
This is very different because the evidence that we're talking about is being offered as opinion evidence under 701, as opposed to an expert who is in this elevated status being offered under 702 and 703.
Counsel, related to that point, what do you make of the appellant's attempts to take the language, the question, and the answer on the record at page 51 and cast that as human lie detector testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, that was completely permissible testimony. It was just a lay
witness. Because, I mean, that's the crux, right? Because if that isn't, then the person that introduced it was the defense. Do you understand what I'm saying? They're saying, no, the government started it.
Correct, Your Honor.
And you're saying, no, they started it. So I'm asking you, what do you make of the question? The question was, why do you say this, right? And then his answer, what do you make of the answer in terms of their trying to cast it as human lie detector testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. That went specifically to the source of the harm, and that was not lie detector testimony. It takes a further inference to turn it into lie detector testimony. And that what this case, this court has held in all those cases is that it requires the final stamp of approval. And that's not what we have in this case. that you don't get to that final question.
Do you need to have a, does there need to be a specific question with respect to either veracity, truthfulness, credibility, in order for it to be human lie detector testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, I think you need to get to that final question. And because even what this court has recognized in, similar to what we have here, is in this child sex abuse cases, where you have an expert coming in and talking about, they can say, I observe these behaviors in children and that it's consistent with what we see in other cases.
Well, but there's a difference between an expert being questioned by counsel and laying it out as an experienced expert and her husband blurting it out. And I'm not sure, you're saying that an expert's testimony would carry more weight, and I'm not sure that that isn't like the famous Harvard Law School knife that cuts both ways. I'm not sure which way that cuts. I'm not sure they wouldn't give more testimony, nor more weight to the credibility of her husband, to the testimony of her husband, than some fairly anonymous expert. But
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to this, but was there an expert that testified in this case about victim behavior?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel, from the government's viewpoint, does this court need to reach the issue of prejudice?
No, Your Honor.
And what's the path that we get to where we don't have to address it?
Following Egan, Your Honor, this court should find that it was invited because the defense opened the door to a limited redirect, which what we have in this case is recognized in Carter and the Supreme Court in Young, that this was a tailored response to what the defense opened on direct to attack the credibility.
And what was the purpose then, going back to the direct testimony, when the government asked, when you originally talked to NCIS, you told NCIS that you thought it possibly could have been you who touched your wife. What was the purpose of that question?
The purpose would be just to reorient the witness and to set up the redirect.
It'd be also to eliminate someone else having committed the act, wouldn't it?
To eliminate, but the corporally, I didn't
If he had not testified that he believed her at the end, the defense certainly could have argued the husband did the touching.
Correct, Your Honor.
And she was mistaken, thinking it was the appellant.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, so his testimony went right to that issue,
didn't it? Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, it could have also, I mean, in some sense, it could have been inoculation, right? Because they could certainly expect that the defense counsel was going to try and impeach him with whatever he said by what he had previously said to NCIS. I mean, that's not impermissible, is it?
For the defense to...
For the government to inoculate their witness against later expected cross-examination by bringing it up themselves.
True, but in terms of bringing it up on direct, it may have been premature, especially in the context in which it came out.
Do you think that the question or the answer in response to the cross-examination question, where the witness said, it's not like I didn't believe her, does that constitute human lie detector testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. It specifically goes to the credibility or believability of the witness, and that's exactly what that is.
So you're saying that it's not like I didn't believe her goes to the credibility of the witness, or does it go to the state of mind of the person who's testifying?
It went to his observations of her credibility.
Well, I mean, it's at the end of a long string of questions about you thought she might have dreamed it, you thought she might have imagined it, she thought, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, Your Honor. But the Sarah's court has recognized, this is one side, it's 11th Circuit one that cites, that recognized that non-responsive answers can still be invited by the defense. And that seems to be where those questions really led into that non-responsive answer, into her credibility, and then the defense then continued to exploit that.
Just following up on Judge Olson's question, I had thought about this several times when I was preparing for the case. Is there a difference between the credibility of a witness and the state of mind of the person who is hearing the statement In other words, it could be argued that they were asking him what he thought. Now, is that the same as asking him what his wife's credibility was, whether he believed her or not, or is there a distinction there somewhere?
In this case, I think the way the question was asked is that it went directly to his observation of her credibility. And I think that still leads down the line of improper testimony, because the government would not be able to ask the same question in reverse.
You know, what concerns me, counsel, is that when you sum up this entire line of questioning and everything, it's like the government said, do you believe Sergeant Martin is guilty? And the witness said, yes. And that certainly would not be permissible, would it?
Correct, Your Honor, that would not be permissible.
But isn't that what the logical inference from all this line of testimony is? I believe my wife. I had some doubts, but now I believe her. She is a truthful person, so on and so forth. Ipso facto, the appellant is guilty.
The defense was trying to bring out that he was innocent, and so This was just merely a limited response to that, and that he was using that to argue for an acquittal. So that's what perspective we have of this trial, is that the defense was bringing this out and using this as a strategy. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We'll now hear rebuttal.
Counsel, do you have what's your view as to whether it's permissible for a lay witness to testify about changes in behavior?
Changes in behavior are permissible, Your Honor. However, for him to then connect first his implication that it wasn't me who touched my wife, and then to give his observations about her changes in behavior, opened the door to defense's cross-examination.
But do you think it was fair for the government to eliminate him as the source of the touching?
That was certainly a potential use of corporal AI. But as
I mean, that is what they did, right? I mean, that is what he said, is it wasn't me.
Correct, but as government suggested, in talking about that, in trial counsel's question about the NCIS statement, she said that trial counsel was using it to frame that area of questioning for Corporal AI. Now, if they had planned to do that, then they should have advised him, listen, you can talk about your observations, but you cannot say whether or not you actually believe she was telling the truth. And so in his direct examination question, when he talks about, as Judge Cox referenced, when he essentially removes himself as a potential suspect, he is saying, I believe that my wife is telling the truth when she says that this was Sergeant Martin who touched her. There was no confession from Sergeant Martin at all.
But the problem that you have is in the government, in that line of questioning and in the answers, the words believe, credibility, truth never come up.
That's correct. Even in the cross-examination, defense is not asking him to say, is she a truth teller or is she a liar? Defense is
dreaming, imagining, et cetera. I mean, those are sort of the opposite of truth, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but defense was asking those questions because of what happened on direct examination. It wasn't until the redirect when this blatant question about whether or not she was telling the truth comes out.
In her testimony, counsel, did she actually identify appellant as the one who touched her? Or was she coming to that conclusion because of the testimony of West, who put the appellant in bed with her?
She testifies that she actually was able to see his face, that there was enough light in the room that it was her who touched her face, But as was discussed in government's argument, there were significant discrepancies between what Lance Corporal CI testified to and what DW testified to include whether or not Sergeant Martin left the room, to include whether he got into the bed with her, to include whether or not somebody came in, the owner of the house came in immediately after this alleged touching. DW says all of that, that somebody actually came into the house. CI doesn't mention that at all. That certainly would have been an avenue for her to say something. There are significant discrepancies between what the government's primary witness said and Mr. DW, their other primary witness. Absent any further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties, and this concludes the presentation of the case. The court will now adjourn until further notice of the court.